James 1:27. I want to begin there tonight. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and the widows, or the orphans and the widows, in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Pure, undefiled, the real deal religion is this, James says. And I wanted to focus in on the first part of what he says, and that is to visit orphans and widows in their trouble. The word visit here not only means to go to see, but really to go to see about. It carries the connotation of giving active care or help. It's proper to translate this verb not merely as visit, but to look after. Pure and undefiled religion is to look after orphans and widows in their trouble, in their affliction. The word trouble there literally means a pressing or a pressure, figuratively, and some type of affliction, some trouble that they're going through. And again, James is being guided by the Holy Spirit, but he's referring to groups of people, orphans and widows, who in that first century would have some unique needs, some pressing needs, some troubles. And he's teaching Christians, just as he's teaching us today, that we're to be in tune, we're to be aware of those struggles that some may go through and look for ways in which to help. Certainly that would include orphans and widows, but I believe it would include anyone who is in need. In fact, for a few moments tonight, I want to zero in on a group of people that are shut in. I noticed in our bulletin we have four listed: Geraldine Bernard, JT and Jean Montgomery, Tom and Retha Capps, Bonnie Crabtree. I think we can add Sue Kay to that list. And others are shut in much of the time. And it's and that will continue to be the case. But remember the shut-ins. Remember the shut-ins. And I guess this really struck me this past week, as JT and Jean Montgomery lost their daughter, 62 years old. She'd been living in Mississippi. She was in better health, they thought, than their daughter who lives in the area, who is bedridden much of the time. And they don't know the exact nature of her passing, but it's a shock nonetheless. Talked to JT Montgomery this afternoon. There is going to be a visitation from 11 to 1 at Valhalla Funeral Home off a lot road tomorrow morning. And talking with JT and his son Jamie, they don't know that there'll be a graveside service, but just a period of visitation for those who knew Judy Adams, their daughter. But JT and Jean Montgomery, some of you will know them, but some of you will not, because they have not been able to come to worship with us, I'm guessing, for about 10 years. And some of you haven't been members at Creekwood in that span of time. And so here are some shut-ins, one family of several, that we need to be sure to remember. All people need to know that they are people of value, that they are cared for, and that they have a purpose. A few months ago, I preached a funeral for Charlie Mae Ludlam, Peggy Holt's mother. And I shared a poem, a very old poem that many of you have read, but it's something I read many years ago that has continued to mean a lot to me. Apparently, it was left by an older lady who died in the geriatric ward of a small hospital near Dundee, Scotland. And it was felt that she had left nothing of any value, but as the nurses were going through her possessions, they came across this poem that she had written. And they thought it was so noteworthy that they reproduced it, and it's been shared many, many times since then. Here's the poem. What do you see, nurses? what do you see? What are you thinking when you're looking at me? A crabby old woman, not very wise, uncertain of habit, with faraway eyes, who dribbles her food and makes no reply when you say in a loud voice, I do wish you'd try. Who seems not to notice the things that you do and forever is losing a stocking or shoe. Who, resisting or not, lets you do as you will with bathing and feeding the long day to fill. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you see? Then open your eyes, nurse. You're not looking at me. I'll tell you who I am as I sit here so still, as I do your bidding, as I eat at your will. I'm a small child of 10 with a father and mother, brothers and sisters who love one another. A young girl of 16 with wings on her feet, dreaming that soon now a lover she'll meet. A bride soon at 20, my heart gives a leap, remembering the vows that I promised to keep. At 25 now, I have young of my own who need me to guide and a secure, happy home. A woman of 30, my young now grow fast, bound to each other with ties that should last. At 40, my young sons have grown and are gone, but my man's beside me to see I don't mourn. At 50, once more, babies play round my knee. Again, we know children, my loved one and me. Dark days are upon me. My husband is dead. I look at the future, I shudder with dread. For my young are all rearing young of their own, and I think of the years and the love that I've known. I'm now an old woman, and nature is cruel. 'Tis jest to make old age look like a fool. The body, it crumbles. Grace and vigor depart. There is now a stone where I once had a heart. But inside this old carcass, a young girl still dwells. And now and again my battered heart swells. I remember the joys. I remember the pain. And I'm loving and living life over again. I think of the years, all too few, gone too fast, and accept the stark fact that nothing can last. So open your eyes, nurses. Open and see. Not a crabby old woman. Look closer. See me. I believe this woman left a lot, don't you? What a powerful reminder to see people. To see people that are often neglected. Psalm 71:9 has been called the prayer of the elderly. The psalmist wrote, do not cast me away when I'm old. Do not forsake me when my strength is gone. There's something that I desire for Creekwood's shut-ins. That they may be shut in, but may they never be shut out. I'm asking you to help me. Let's look out. Let's make sure that our shut-ins are not shut out. I was doing some research, looking for ideas, looking for things that have been done or are being done, illustrations, examples, and I ran across an article. Actually, it was a print of a news, Fox 31 News out of Denver, Colorado. And I'm going to share with you excerpts of this article. It's written by Lois Melkonian. Don't know Lois, but she writes from her personal experience. Growing up, I was told many things, but among those that stand out to this day, here are some things she'd always been told. Say thank you for the food before leaving the dinner table. Wash your hands. Never use the phrase shut up. And be part of family Sundays that included visiting the Chateau, a nursing home in Modesto, California, every month. From the age of 8 through my young teenage years, our family of 8 would pile into our station wagon after church, and once a month we'd spend the afternoon visiting shut-ins. My mom would play the piano and we'd sing. We'd go from room to room and shake people's hands, and we would just sit while my dad talked to any number of people who lit up every time we came in. We had no family members at the nursing home. We were part of a community who believed that bonding over the generations mattered. When I graduated from college, got married, and had children, I recalled many of the rules I grew up with. But the idea of visiting a nursing home simply didn't cross my mind. I had so many excuses: way too busy, no family at a facility, it might make me sad, it might make my kids sad, so many strange smells, you name it. But the truth is, I don't ever remember being sad as a kid when I went to the chateau. Instead, I clearly remember feeling better. There's something about bringing a smile to a total stranger that lifts your mood. Certainly, I had it better than any of them. Now I learn the harsh statistic that more than 60% of nursing home residents have no one who comes to visit them. No one. And there are many reasons. No living close relative. Children may have died first, may not have any children, or no connection with family. More than 60% never have a visitor. And then she writes about a particular person, Linda Holloway, whose grandmother's name was Bessie. Her grandmother, Bessie, was put into a nursing home in Texas. Well, Linda Holloway was living in Denver. But because there was no close family, especially in the area where her grandmother had been placed in the nursing home, and her grandmother's battle with Alzheimer's, it was only getting worse, she purposed once a month that she would travel down from Denver to Texas to see her grandmother. She says, "As I made my monthly drive from Denver to Texas to visit her in the nursing home, I became consumed by anger because of what she had to endure. Not only was she going through the horrid stages of the disease, but she was suffering needless pain from neglect," and she mentions other things. So here's Linda Holloway in Denver, her grandmother down in Texas. And this is on her mind all the time as she makes that journey once a month. And so she was so moved by her grandmother's plight that she vowed to make a change. And so 20 years ago, she and two other ladies established what is now known as Bessie's Hope in Denver. Bessie's Hope. They began taking groups of children to visit nursing home residents. And when they saw how beneficial it was to both groups, they knew they were on to something. Holloway says, "Seeing the need and seeing the magic that happens with elders and kids, this relationship-driven dream came true. Bessie's Hope began offering one-hour orientation sessions that would teach them some things to expect and also some communication tools to deal with all sorts of those residents in the nursing home. Holloway discovered the immediate contact made people feel valuable. We found the at-risk youth need the same thing the elders need: to be valued and have a purpose." All of us need that, don't we? To be valued and to have a sense of purpose. Bessie's Hope began to work in four areas: youth and the elderly. They began a program coordinating with teachers to blend the nursing home experience into the school's curriculum. And they would take students there and have projects with which those students would work with the residents in completing the project, participating with them, not doing things to them or for them. Another area was family and the elderly. They matched individuals and families who would become companions and advocates and even extended families. They had an area in which they worked with community and the elderly. They would invite workplaces to send their employees ever so often, every couple of weeks, once a month, to visit in these nursing homes and to establish relationships. And they even had one more area, a fourth area, where they had this idea of dreams can come true. If they found out that one of the residents of the nursing home, for example, wanted to meet this professional athlete, they would see if they could make that happen. Or if one of them wanted to go to the symphony. They would do what they could to make that happen. So here was someone, Linda Holloway, whose grandmother was placed in a nursing home, that was convicted enough to realize that there are other people in nursing homes that are being neglected, and she sought to do what she could. The Legacy Project says establishing connections for elders in their community is rewarding for young and old. Listen to what they wrote. While a single visit to a nursing home is a valuable experience for children and will brighten the day for older adults, an ongoing visitation program is most effective. Said one staff member in a nursing home, "We don't want it to be a let's go and see the old people, just like it's a trip to the Statue of Liberty." An ongoing series of visits allows the understanding and trust to develop, which are essential for a real connection between people of any age. And isn't that what it's about? Establishing real connections. That those who are shut in realize they're not shut out, but they're a part of a family, and they're a part of a loving family that cares for them. So I want to be very, very practical for a few moments with you and share with you some things that I found and adapted about reaching out to the shut-in. There are 12 steps. I'm only going to list about 9 of them. But I ask you to think about these and see how we can implement them. The author of this article gave this scenario. A friend of yours has just moved into a nursing home. Your friend's world has become very small. There's the call bell, the bedside table, the curtain around the bed, the nursing station down the hall. Sue Cade had to make that adjustment. But by the way, Sue Cade is in her own private room. And to quote her, "I'm home." And I'm so thankful that she feels that way. But she always asks about her church family. She always asks about her church family. This writer goes on to say, after making decisions for a lifetime, your friend is left with a day that proceeds on schedule, waking up, bathing, meals, enjoying activities, going to bed. Worse, your friend is separated from the people he or she loves, and death has taken many friends. Perhaps your friend sees little to look forward to. Can visits make a visit? Medical personnel, caregivers, and the patients themselves say yes. Here are some suggestions for making your visits effective. Number one, entering the room. Should you say, "How are you?" Not always. Not always. Your friend may be depressed or in discomfort, yet try not to give in to negative thinking. Instead of saying, "How are you?" perhaps it would be better to say, "I've come to be with you for a while." And open up the discussion that way. Place your chair fairly close where your friend can see you without straining. If you remain standing, you give the impression that you're going to leave in just a moment. Number two, what is there to talk about or to do? What is there to talk about or to do? Can you draw out memories of his or her life? Can you ask about his or her work, hobbies, travels? Or take along something together that you can do together if silence becomes uncomfortable. You could ask, "Would you like me to write some notes for you?" Or bring a book, a Bible, a CD player. Or do what a friend of mine did, this writer says. She ran the tape recorder. Those are extinct. But she had a recording device while a 90-year-old recalled cherished moments for her family. Here's something you can do. Take a pen and paper and say, "Tell me about your life." Now, if you're visiting with Miss Annie Laurie, you may want to get comfortable. But it'll bless your life. It'll bless your life. Do you know there's a member at Creekwood who's jumped out of a plane over 1,000 times with a parachute? Did you know that? His name is Al Warsh. He's jumped out of an airplane over 1,000 times. I never would have dreamed that, but he has. Ask questions. I think you'll find many are willing and ready to tell their story. Which brings us to number three, listen. Listen to them. Let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath. Swift to hear. Researchers asked people over 65, do you have someone in whom you can confide? And those who said yes had better health, both mental and physical, than those who said no. It's no wonder, is it? So listen. Number four, your friend longs to hear, well done. Well done. What important contributions to friends, family, community, and church did that person have? And let's talk about those. And to those who may be sensing a loss of their self-worth, let's remind them of their past contributions and how much those mean to us. Many older people mentally compile a failure list, and during low moments, they'll think over all the failures that they've made. Well, let's turn these thoughts into more positive channels by recalling past successes. Let's remind them of the positive ways they've impacted even our own lives. Number five, give your friend control. As you know, a person that's moved into a nursing home loses a lot of control, a lot of decision making. Give your friend control. Be alert for every possible opportunity to leave him or her in control. Consult him about where your chair should be placed, where a gift of flowers can be best enjoyed. Let your friend do things for himself or herself if able. Because if we jump up and perform one service after another, it could be interpreted as, you don't think I can do anything for myself anymore. Give your friend control. Number six, inactivity is dangerous. Inactivity is a major hazard of the elderly. Authorities on aging tell us, leading to physical decline or even total disability. Can you bring something to stimulate activity after you've left? Someone in here took Sue Cade some find-a-word puzzle books. I think she has several. It's going to take her a while to complete those. But that's great for her to have something to focus on, especially since she doesn't like to watch television. Is there something we can do? Or list the activities that you know your friend has enjoyed in the past and figure out a way that you could incorporate some of those activities into their lives even now. Next, be aware that you may hear, I'm no longer needed. I'm no longer needed. Remember, every person needs to have a sense of being valued and have a purpose in their life. Seek out ways in which you can help your friend understand that they still have purpose. And seek to help provide activities to that end. Put an extension on your visit is the next one. Put an extension on your visit. Leave something that will say you're special to me after you've gone. I've seen a couple of plants left by some of you. And I think that's a good way of doing it. Something that will be left behind after your visit that says, hey, they thought of me. In another situation, two friends created a mobile with photos of the patient's friends, leaving it hanging within the patient's sight. But leave something that will put an extension on your visit. And finally, take note of how you say goodbye. Say so long. Watch for signs of weariness. Sometimes a short visit is twice as helpful as a long one. You can read the signs. they start yawning and start looking at their bed, that's a good indication it's time to go. But leave your friend with hope of another visit. Goodbye for now. It's always good to see you. I can't wait to see you again. And before you leave, say an encouraging word to other people in that facility. When you pray with your friend, pray for the roommate. Pray for the caregivers. Remember, again, over 60% of nursing home residents never receive a visit. And as you return home, thank God for your friend and the opportunity to show him or her how much you cherish them. I want to conclude with a reading from Matthew 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And He will set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the King will say to those on His right hand, "Come, you blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave Me food. I was thirsty, and you gave Me drink. I was a stranger, and you took Me in. I was naked, and you clothed Me. I was sick, and you visited Me. I was in prison, and you came to Me." Then the righteous will answer Him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the King will answer and say to them, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, My brethren, you did it to Me." Then He will also say to those on His left hand, "Depart from Me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave Me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave Me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take Me in. Naked, and you did not clothe Me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit Me." Then they also will answer Him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you?" Then He will answer them, saying, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to Me." And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. I remember Jerry Hill speaking in this auditorium about this passage, and he made the statement summarizing this, that the love of the least is a sign of the saved. The love of the least is a sign of the saved. Let's remember, especially at this time of year, remembering friends and family. Let's remember the shut-ins and make sure they're not shut out. God doesn't want anybody shut out of His kingdom. He wants all to be a part. He gave Jesus to make that possible. Perhaps tonight there's someone that's ready to become a part of the kingdom, the church. If you're ready to confess your faith that Jesus is the Son of God, having turned from sin and repentance, you're ready to be baptized into Christ so that your sins can be washed away. Jesus has made it possible for us to be included in the kingdom. He doesn't want anyone left out. Perhaps there's others that need the prayers of the church. If that be the case, please come and let us know as together we stand and sing.